Welcome back to Canandaigua, 1310 WOKR. This is Three Men and a Microphone on the big coastal snowstorm of the year. And we have a guest, J.D. Chapman, Bruce Chapman, three generations of caring for you and your insurance. And this is Three Men and a Microphone, Canandaigua 2020 with Mike Yarger, Armin Marinetti, and what does Brother Weiss call you?
The kick-ass girl.
The kick-ass girl, who's our videographer. And I'm Corporal Tim Thornton. Take it away, Mike Yarger.
Okay, so we'll start with the weather, because it's a little cold.
Baby, it's cold outside, right?
We're recording Friday morning, and when I drove down this morning, it was 2 degrees in Brighton and 0 degrees here in Canandaigua. So one of the recommendations is that you get all your pets inside, and unless you own a husky, that's probably a good idea. You know, some of the dogs, they're made for this cold weather, and they'll want to be outside despite the cold. And if that's what they want, go ahead and let them out and let them run for a little bit. But just keep an eye on them and make sure that they're not, you know, getting any frostbite or anything like that. Right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Also, schools are closed on Friday, so a lot of people are happy about that. But some people were complaining that the school superintendent was a little slow in getting the word out. Now, typically in Canandaigua, word about school closure usually comes out about 4 a.m. in the morning. This one was reported at 6 p.m. on Thursday, so the day before. So I don't think that's slow by any measure. That seems to be like ample time for parents to be able to make whatever arrangements they need to for the school closure. So kudos to Jamie Farr, in my opinion, for getting the notice out there early and giving the parents a heads up. And I think 6 p.m. the day before is ample time.
Well, they got all these warming stations now,
right,
you know, around the area. So maybe drop your kids off there for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, with the homeless.
Yeah. And speaking of homeless, if you know of people who are homeless or whatever, there are accommodations that are available for homeless people in our community. And there's two ways that you can access that. During normal business hours, you can call 211 anytime, and they have emergency personnel who can assist with getting housing. Okay? If it's after hours, after normal business hours, you can call the 911 number, and they will put you in touch with the emergency DSS personnel who can take care of getting those accommodations done. So that's what you want to do if you come across somebody who's homeless or if you yourself are homeless. That's how you access services here in our community. If you're up in Rochester, you don't dial 211, you dial 311. Monroe County is different than Ontario County.
You know, I once went to New York City and I wanted directions. So I walk into this bar and I said, you know, how do you get to the Brown Derby restaurant? It's supposed to be a big place. And the guy doesn't want to talk to me at all. I'm not his clientele.
Right.
And so he goes, I ask again, and he still ignores me. Well, that just is not my personality. So I make sure he hears me, and I make sure he's looking at me. And I said, I asked you a question. Where is the Brown Derby restaurant? And he goes, just dial 411. 411. I go, what is that all about? Well, I go outside, and my buddies from Alabama are laughing so hard because they told me to go in there and ask directions, and they're actually slapping the sidewalk because they can't even stand up from laughing. And it was, he goes, look at the sign. Apparently, I'd walked into the Nut and Bolt, and the drink special of the day was the woo-woo shot. So, not his clientele.
I guess not.
But if you want information, call 411.
There you go. Yeah. Big shout out to AutoZone. Some of the folks have been swinging by there to get the needs taken care of for their automobiles, you know, new batteries, things like that. Apparently the guys over there at AutoZone, they'll rush right out and take your old battery out, install your new battery. They're putting windshield washer fluid into the vehicles for the customers, things like this. And people are saying, you know, where do you get that kind of service anymore? And they said, you know, we want to give kudos to the manager of AutoZone for, you know, such good training and like this to the people, right? And this makes a lot of sense, right? Because this manager clearly understands good customer service. So word gets back to the manager. The manager gets on Canandaigua 2020. Isn't it Ashley Spina? Now, who would think that the manager of an AutoZone would be a woman? But kudos to her for the training that she's done for her employees to give such exceptional customer service.
So imagine, what's the opposite of kudos? Aw craps?
Yeah.
So, you know, aw craps to any of the guys out there with beards and your man bun, if you dare to pull into AutoZone and say, could you give me some windshield fluid? Could you help me out there? That's, and I'll bet you, you'll see grown men out there going, I don't have to get out of my car. I don't have to do it.
Yeah, that's me.
That's an all crap.
That's me.
That's an
all
crap.
I know how to do it, but yeah, who wants to get out there and, you know, have to get your glove off to get the cover off and all that kind of stuff?
When you dropped off my windshield fluid, I donned my gloves. I went out there,
sure,
figured out how to open the hood of that truck.
You didn't think I was going to go out and put it in for you, did you?
I can go over to Farnsworth. I know they'll do it, but
good.
I'm too much of a man to even ask.
Oh, come on.
No way.
Well, speaking of being a man, we're actually going to talk about an exceptional woman from Canandaigua, and her name was Nancy McCormick. Now, what's interesting about Nancy is that she still has a lot of relatives in the Canandaigua area. And why is that, you might ask? Well, for one thing, she bore 13 children in her lifetime.
Oh, a Catholic.
No small feat, right? So the Gerstners are related to this Nancy McCormick, and the Reppards are related to the McCormicks. Now, I know some of the Gerstners. I know some of the Coffs. They're also related. The Coffs, I think, had like 11 kids in their family. The Reppards had, I think, 7 kids in their family. So these are people who come from very big families. But she was a lot more than just a mother. She was married at 14. She bore 13 kids. She was married for 28 years. Her husband passed away, but prior to doing that, he had actually established an ice business here in Canandaigua. And they cut the ice off from the lake and slid it down. And you know where the state park is, where they launched the boats down there? That's where her ice house was. So it actually came up Sucker Brook a little bit and then got stored in the ice house. And you think that when they make an ice house, that everything would be nice and level, but it's not. Everything actually tips towards the back. So when they loaded the ice in, the ice itself just slid right back to the back of the building. And then they would stack it up. They'd throw some sawdust on top of it to help insulate it, to prevent it from melting. And then all summer long, they'd distribute it to places like Sonnenberg. And Nancy, after her husband passed away, she ran that business. And many times they were shorthanded, and she would be out there on the lake cutting the ice and pushing it along and, you know, loading it up into the wagons where the horses would haul it into the... She was doing all this work herself. They interviewed her when she was 90 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, she was really an amazing woman. She also ran a lunchroom down on the pier. Now, the pier was built while she lived in Canandaigua. And after they built the pier, they made her the pier mistress. So her job was to collect the taxes from the steamboats that went back and forth. She would collect the taxes from the vehicles that would come onto the pier to load and unload produce and things of that nature. So she was the tax collector down there. She also ran a boat livery, so she would rent out boats to people coming down onto the pier. She had the ice house, and she ran a lunchroom that was known at Daisy's off the pier, kind of like the hot dog stands that you see down there today. So a pretty incredible woman, and you know, we give her a lot of kudos. I think there's something in the waters of Canandaigua Lake that just breeds some incredible people in this area.
It is the best drinking water in New York State.
That's what they say. So I want to talk about some of the events that we have coming up.
Okay.
We have the Kiwanis Club is going to have a kids' carnival. That's going to be January 20th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the YMCA. They're going to have a bounce house, photo booth, obstacle course, and the tickets for that are going to be 50 cents a piece, and apparently they're sold in groups of 10, so $5 for 10 tickets, and, you know, the kids can take advantage of playing in the bounce houses and stuff like that. Proceeds go to benefit the Kiwanis Club, and Kiwanis does a lot of great things around our community. We also have a rabies prevention clinic coming up. Have you gotten your rabies shot, Tim?
No. I'm sure I'll have rabies.
Well, that's going to be Saturday, January 13th. It runs from 9 a.m. to noon, so just 3 hours. If you're bringing a dog in, it has to be on a leash. If you're bringing a cat in, it has to be in a pet carrier. If you have your past rabies certificate, you need to bring that in as well. This is going to be at the Ontario County Safety Training Facility at 2914 County Road 48. And they'll have vaccines for dogs, cats, and ferrets. I didn't realize that ferrets had to get rabies vaccine, but apparently that's the case. And the dogs, cats, and ferrets have to be a minimum of 3 months old.
That's good. It's very important to have all those vet shots up. And remember, when you go to your dog groomer or your pet groomer and you don't have those shots or records of those shots, a lot of places will turn you away.
Right.
And they should.
Right.
Because they don't know where your dog or cat has been.
Right. Okay. So also the 43rd annual Robert Bradshaw Memorial Wrestling Tournament is taking place January 12th and 13th at Canandaigua Academy. And they actually bring schools from the area all together, and they have this wrestling tournament. And you can get a weekend pass for $10. So that's pretty inexpensive. The proceeds go to benefit the wrestling club. The Canandaigua cheerleaders are selling donuts, Krispy Kreme donuts and coffees. It's $10 a dozen for the donuts and $10 for the bag of coffee. Those have to be ordered by the 12th of January, that's a Friday, and then they're delivered on the 18th, so that's the following Thursday. So they would be nice and fresh Friday morning, Tim, if you're interested in getting donuts, and those proceeds would go to benefit the Canandaigua cheerleaders.
Can I just chime in here for
sure,
a second?
Please do.
Go back, Mike, for a second to the Bradshaw tournament.
Yeah, Robert Bradshaw Memorial Wrestling Tournament.
For many years, I refereed that tournament as one of the teams of referees, and they do a very good job of running that tournament, and we usually get some good competitors from across New York State there. So if you have free time, just pop in there. There's wrestling going on all day long. You can probably catch a couple good matches, and the sport of wrestling really needs spectator support because it's probably one of the toughest sports out there, and it's losing favor. And I'm not sure why, other than maybe it's harder to get participants because it can be nasty. It could be a nasty sport. And a lot of, especially parents, they think their kids are getting hurt when it looks worse than it is. So,
well, you know, if you're raising a boy or a girl and you can get them into wrestling or boxing, and I would suggest both. My dad had a rule. Every season, you played one sport. You can work, you can go play, but you're going to play that sport and you're going to get passing grades. And I would, as a man, you need to learn how to wrestle.
Yeah.
And box. And remember, you box a wrestler, you wrestle a boxer.
That's right.
Good point. That's a good point.
Okay, so there's also a cornhole tournament coming up at the Elks Club.
Oh, good, right after wrestling.
Right.
Cornhole.
January 24th at the Elks Club.
Should have announced that at the Nut and Bolt restaurant.
Can you delete that?
It's $25. You get to play and have pizza. There's going to be prizes for the top four teams, and the proceeds from that are going to benefit the Canandaigua softball and baseball organizations. So that's our upcoming events. We had a few other topics that we wanted to cover. One person was complaining that they got a ticket for parking across the sidewalk in Canandaigua.
Across the sidewalk?
Across the sidewalk.
They thought that was correct.
Well, they didn't. They knew that that probably wasn't acceptable. However, it's better than having somebody drive home drunk, right?
Well, they drove to the sidewalk.
And they parked their car, and they went inside, and they celebrated New Year's, and went out the following morning, and found a ticket on their car. Now, the thing is, in the city of Canandaigua, you can't park your vehicle on the street overnight, right? So, in many communities, you would just park on one side of the street or the other, and you wouldn't have to worry about getting a ticket. But in Canandaigua, you're not allowed to park overnight on any of the streets. And actually, if you come into
town, or the sidewalk,
you come into town on any road, and you'll see a sign coming into town that says no parking on any city streets between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m.
It doesn't say no parking on the sidewalk.
No, it doesn't say no parking on the sidewalk.
Methinks they might have had a wee bit of drink prior parking on the sidewalk.
Everybody's driveways cross the sidewalk.
You don't park on the sidewalk. Well, we don't do it in the city.
They had other cars that were taking up the spaces in the driveway. So they pulled up behind one of the cars that was parked in the driveway and happened to run across the sidewalk.
Wait, all right. So we have the perfect person here today to pass judgment. Running for sheriff. And we're going to bring you in again later for a real interview. But while we're debating this, we might as well. We could have had Judge Doran on for this.
Right. Yeah.
But so running for sheriff, Kevin Henderson. And, sir, how would you pass judgment on that call?
Well, but again, there are obviously the laws are on the books for the city of Canandaigua.
Right. As opposed to Ontario County, this wouldn't apply to the sheriff. It's city police officers.
Correct. Each town and city has their own ordinances and laws. City has a law that, and I live in the city of Canandaigua,
okay,
that you cannot park across the sidewalk. It is illegal.
Right.
So obviously while on patrol, that officer saw that violation and made the judgment that he was going to enforce that law that day for that person parking on the sidewalk.
So what a way to start the new year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I say no mercy.
Yeah, well, apparently the officer feels the same way.
You know, when I park in the city up in Rochester, there's just enough room for two vehicles, and I am constantly outside going behind the truck looking at where the sidewalk starts and where my truck goes. Because if I go too far over, not only can I get a ticket, but when they go to plow, I'm always worried the guy's going to nick me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But that law was, again, many, many years ago, but what it enables the city to do is to clean the streets from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m.
Right.
And then during the summer, of course, the city has the street sweepers. So that's why they enacted that law, to make sure the city was able to maintain the public streets in case they needed to clear them.
And the funny thing is, up in Rochester, they have to maintain the streets also.
Yes.
And yet somehow up there, they allow alternate side of the street parking so that they can take care of that same type of business.
Yeah, it's called they don't plow on the other side. Yeah.
Right.
They
exactly.
never plowed on the opposite side the last storm. Sure, they're supposed to. They just never get around to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't shovel your driveway. You shovel your driveway and then the other half of the road.
Right. That they pushed into your driveway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay. And then, Tim, we saw some black and white photos on Canandaigua 2020 that were posted by a service member who was back home visiting here in Canandaigua. His name was Anthony Watson. My understanding is Anthony had an opportunity to stop by the shop. And you had a chance to talk to him.
So apparently, Anthony Watson, who's a drill sergeant in the U.S. Army Reserves, and Melissa, if you could scan your camera up there on that black T-shirt, right on the ceiling, and it says D.S. Watson. Now, he gave that to me years ago for part of our collectible T-shirt collection that we post on the ceilings. And what a great guy.
Yeah.
So he stopped in. He's a young man. He's in the Army. He's been in the Army for a while. He's a staff sergeant. And while he came home on leave over the holidays, he steps out into Canandaigua, and he sees this perfect blanket of snow over the main street and the businesses and the sidewalk. And there's and I remarked about the same reason that I think he took the picture. There was not a footprint you know, no one had stepped on the snow. No one was
right,
there.
It was like just, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Just a perfect.
Matter of fact, it wasn't 2 o'clock. It was 0200 as spoken in military time. Yeah.
So when he took the picture, it was beautiful. And he purposely took it in black and white. And he posted quite a few. And then he put it on Canandaigua 2020. He got over 1,000
Actually, over 1,600
likes
on his pictures.
Many
right.
compliments, many goodwill wishes, because
right.
he's on his way to Saudi Arabia. He's gone. He's over there now. And he came in the store just to say, I had earlier met, I think, his aunt or a woman that knows him through another family that shops here. And we just had this great talk. So, you know, as an older guy, I kind of push the envelope. And I bring up politics, and I bring up religion, and I bring up military policy of the day. And you know what? I felt that he was dead on, especially the way he looks at things and his deliverance. And even if he and I didn't agree, he knew how to discuss it without ever being unbalanced. He was perfect gentleman. He's extremely smart. He speaks several languages, and I believe he does that for the civil affairs out of Webster, New York.
Wow.
So, great guy, and I expect to, and he's born and bred right here in Canandaigua, so I would suspect he will become a valuable asset to our community when he does retire.
That's good to know. Yep. Is he planning on making a career out of it?
Well, that by the looks of that T-shirt, he was here around, I think, 08. So he's already been in
9 years
yeah. or more.
Yeah.
So he probably will stay in. And he's already young. I checked his age versus his rank. He's got a very good future.
Good.
He is right on time with everything he's doing.
Okay. So we were talking about how great the waters of Canandaigua are. And they actually brought us another great person, Judge Steve Aronson. He's announced that he's going to be stepping down at the end of 2018. And actually, that apparently is a state law that the judges are allowed to work up until age 70. And he will turn 70, I guess, in January and will not be continuing his career beyond that. But he presently presides over the drug courts, the veterans courts, the mental health courts. He's been at this for 35-plus years, and I have the utmost respect for Judge Aronson. He is well-liked in the community. Even people who he sentenced to prison and things like that respect him. So that says a lot about his character. So.
Even the people that he sentenced to jail.
Right.
That's good.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
No, I'm telling you, he's a very fair man.
Now, when he steps down, will there be an election?
No, there will not be an election. That's an important. Oh, no, I take that back. That is an elected position.
Yeah.
So there will be
Kevin,
an election on that.
Yeah, this November there will be an election for his office, for the city of Canandaigua, for the judge. That's an elected position.
Yes. Oh, I wonder who will run. That's interesting.
Well,
yeah,
any ideas? We have to keep our ears open.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy year, I think, this year for obviously some county races and city races as well.
Judges are great for their knowledge, but when you interview them, they're not really allowed to expound on their own personal beliefs. So you can't really, you know, you can't really get to know the man, I don't think. You can only, and in my opinion, they really shouldn't even run on a political party. It should be null and void because of that job.
Correct, yeah. But I agree with you. Judge Aronson's done a terrific job. I've known Steve 30-plus years. When he was just a private attorney before he ran for judgeship.
Yeah.
So he's done a great job.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, our community's really been blessed to have him sitting on the bench. So, we were talking about some of the pictures that were posted on Canandaigua 2020, and one video got posted that I really liked. It showed a T-Rex out there shoveling snow on the sidewalks, and it was so hilarious. I'm telling you, if you haven't seen it, you need to go on Canandaigua 2020 and check that out. It was really just so funny.
Shoveling snow.
And throwing snow with a shovel.
We travel in different circles.
I guess we do.
Because somebody I know passed a video of a T-Rex pole dancing.
Pole dancing?
Yeah, it didn't go well.
I wouldn't imagine it would with those short arms.
Yeah, it must have been. It's a great way to exercise.
Not to mention the heavy backside. So, the city has made some interesting comments. They had the swearing-in ceremony, and it was Steve Aronson who did the swearing-in for the mayor and the council members and like this. And then the mayor said that they're going to be updating the comprehensive plan in the city, most likely this year. And they're going to do that based on a community-wide survey that's going to be done. So we're looking forward to that. And they had the first city council meeting in January this past Tuesday. And there really wasn't much on the agenda. About the main thing that they do is do the committee assignments for the various council members to say which ones are going to be serving on which committees. And then they decided to have an assistant city manager position. And so they authorized that position. Now, there's been a person named Rob, who has been an intern serving under John Goodwin, who I believe is going to be given this assistant city manager's position. And, of course, I attend most city council meetings, and I was there once again. And John Goodwin, when he was assistant city manager, I also got up and said, look, we don't need an assistant city manager in a city the size of Canandaigua. We're top-heavy as far as administration goes. Well, nobody agreed with me, and everybody voted for John to be the assistant city manager. And then we know that they put in another city manager who didn't work out, and then they promoted John to city manager. And so now here comes Rob. He wants to be assistant city manager. Once again, I got up, and it has nothing to do with John or Rob or anybody else. We just don't need another position in administration. We'd be much better served having another police officer or another firefighter for our public safety. But the city council didn't see it that way, and they voted unanimously to create this position of assistant city manager. But one of the interesting things that I found was that they're going to be doing renovations on the Hurley building this year. And the Hurley building is where our DPW works out of. Those buildings were built around the 1960s, and they have like a men's room there, locker room, but they don't have a locker room for women. So the building needs some updating. They need to have women's bathrooms and things like this. And one of the things that the city said was, well, let's do a $7 million renovation to this facility, and we'll, you know, put all these things in, including a new meeting room. And I went to that meeting. I said, no. You don't need more meeting rooms in Canandaigua. We have a ton of meeting rooms. I said the Elks Club has a meeting room. The Legion has a meeting room. The Rotary has a meeting room.
Public Safety Building has a meeting
room. Well, they had a meeting room, but they were going to be doing away with that meeting room and putting in a brand new one with all state-of-the-art equipment. I said the Wood Library just expanded. We can't do it at the Wood Library. We'd be taking up too much of the resources. Well, guess what? The Hurley building's going to be renovated this year, and guess where all the committee meetings are going to be held? At the Wood Library. So apparently, there are meeting rooms at the Wood Library that the city could use.
If you don't spend the money, you're not going to get as much money next year. That's the way a lot of people think.
That does seem to be the philosophy in some people's minds. I hate to see taxpayer money wasted, though. That irks me. So that pretty much... We're going to talk about the state of the state, right?
State of the state. Here's where Armin gets the up at bat.
Okay.
Do we have time for that, or the...
He's still... You okay?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Okay. So Governor Cuomo gave his state of the state address this week, and he had all kinds of liberal proposals, and I think Armin's going to help fill us in on some of them.
Yeah, I'm going to just touch some of the highlights that might affect more people throughout the state. So I went online, and I found both the transcript of the State of the State address and the video. So what I did is I watched the video while I followed the transcript, because that helps me absorb it better, to understand it better. So it took hours to do this. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I'm just going to go to the part that I think is very important to most people. But he's a very good speaker. don't know if you ever...
We're talking about Cuomo?
Governor Cuomo. If you ever get a chance to listen to the man speak, he's a very good speaker, and I was impressed. Our politics aren't in line, but he does have the ability to make you feel like he's doing something for you.
It's not going to sound like fingernails on a chalkboard?
No.
All right.
No, he's kind of humorous. He reminds me of my ethnicity. Okay. I mean, Cuomo, Marionetti.
Ends in a vowel.
Ends in a vowel. Yeah, thank you, Tim, for filling in the...
Allow the Irish guy in the room to go.
So...
You might as well just say he's part of the tribe.
I thought I was listening to my cousin.
Oh.
You know, my cousin Vinny up there telling us how he's going to help us all out.
Cousin Vinny.
Let me go right
down. He looks like Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. There's 18 pages of transcript, but I did some notes, so I'm going to scoot right down to page 11. And if you people at home want to follow along on your computers, God bless you. but I'm going to page 11 because this is where he took a swipe at the federal government. So it's kind of connected to the Civil War radio segment we did earlier, where we have this headbutting between the states and the federal government. And they're all supposed to be getting along, but they don't play nice in the sandbox, I guess. So let me just scroll down here. If you're going to go to the video and try to listen to this, I would suggest you do that because it really helps fill in the pieces. I found it at about 51 minutes into the hour and a half video. So you can scoot right up to the 51-minute mark, and that way you don't have to spend almost an hour searching this stuff out. So let me read here. It's titled Our Third Challenge. So I'm not going to talk about the other two. But the third challenge is that the federal government is the most hostile and aggressive toward New York in history. And I might, if I sound a little bit like Cuomo, it's because I've been listening to him so long that I picked up some of his mannerisms. So, it has shot an arrow aimed at New York's economic heart. We must start this year with $4 billion deficit compounded by a $2 billion cut primarily from the federal government and health care. So we've talked about that on past episodes, is that our state is spending roughly $6 billion, with a B, dollars more than they're bringing in revenue. $6 billion more. Just let that sink in as a business owner, Tim. Doesn't really make much sense to be that deep in the hole. But the federal government is the problem.
According to Cuomo.
According to Governor Cuomo. So, again, he's worth listening to. It's not like nails on the chalkboard because he does a very good job of laying out the problem. And then at the end, he thanks everybody. That's what I found very impressive. He's very thankful to all the people in the room. He mentions Brian Kolb as the assembly minority leader, a local guy that most of us know. And
he may very well turn out to be his main opponent in the next election.
Very, very good point. Yes, he wants to be the next governor. So how far do I go with this? Let me try to sum it up, because there was a statement a few minutes down from that 51-minute mark. I'm going to read what Governor Cuomo said, and then I'm going to give some commentary on how a normal taxpayer thinks. So he says that with this removal of our property tax deduction on our federal income tax forms, what this is going to do, quote, is this effectively raises middle class and working family property tax 20% to 25% all across the state. It raises that state income tax to 20% to 25% all across the state. So that was his shot at the federal government. By taking away our property tax deductions for 2018, we've raised the state income tax. Now, as you guys know, I've done tax work for many years. And out of the hundreds of tax forms that I've prepared, for federal in New York State, I don't recall anyone ever taking the itemized deductions for a New York State tax form, because the standard deduction is higher than the federal's standard deduction. So in essence, what Trump did with his tax proposal is modeled New York State. So if it's double taxation now under the Trump plan, it was double taxation always under
prior
the way New York State has done their state income tax. So please, I'm trying to be very specific, because when we hear taxes, we throw them all together. I'm talking income taxes, federal versus state. I'm not talking property taxes. I'm just telling you that there isn't much difference on what's the new tax proposal is going to do. Okay, so I guess there's ton more notes. How far do you want me to go? I mean, you tell me how much time.
You don't have a lot of time.
All right,
hit it. Say it.
All right, here's the last thing I'm going to say, and then we could pick up more on this in the next
episode. Right, we'll be talking about this topic for a while yet.
Yes,
so.
For weeks to come. Quote, this is no conceivable justification. There is no conceivable justification about this tax increase. New York is already the number one donor state in the nation, which is true. We pay $48 billion more to Washington than we get back. No state contributes more to the federal government and gets back less than New York State. On top of that injustice, Washington's tax plan now uses New York and California as piggy banks to finance tax cuts for Republican states. New York will pay an additional $14 billion on top of the $48 billion that we currently pay. Remember the old adage? My favorite part. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. Well, they changed it. We're now robbing the blue states to pay for the red states. It is crass. It is ugly. It is divisive. It is partisan legislating. It is an economic civil war.
Wow.
You know, it seems to me our governor's a little bit short on the memory. Because it wasn't that long ago, I remember being down in Texas and the Texans saying to me, well, I guess we got to pay more to bail out New York City. And that had to have been in the early 80s, so you could look that up. But at one point, they were bailing us out.
Yeah.
So we may have a constitutional fight on hands. We'll stop here because, again, there's more that's going to be coming down the road in weeks to come. I'm not sure. He doesn't make any – he mentions the legal battle between New York State and the federal government, but it's only a glancing blow. There's not any detail worth even noting in the fact that he says he's going to take it to the courts. So,
okay.
Anything to add?
Well, let's stop here.
When we come back, we're going to interview Kevin Henderson.
Running for Ontario County Sheriff.
Correct.
All right, we'll be right back after these messages.
The Military Exchange.
Welcome back to Canandaigua 1310 WOKR. Three men and a microphone, and I'm here today with Kevin Henderson, running for Ontario County Sheriff. Elect a sheriff for all the people, a lifelong resident of Ontario County, and a third-generation law enforcement officer. He has many accolades. So join the Henderson team, and this is This is Three Men and a Microphone,
right.
And we're going to interview Mr. Kevin Henderson. Or actually, you already have a title. What's your job title right now?
Well, I'm still with the Ontario County Sheriff's Office. I'm a part-time deputy. But I'm also one of the county coroners as well. I'm an elected county coroner. I'm in my second term as a county coroner. So,
good.
Now, you said you're one of the county coroners.
Yes.
Is there more than one?
In our county, we have four. Most of the counties that have the coroner system.
Right.
New York State has two different medical examiner system or coroner system. The medical examiners are appointed by the legislative body of the county, Monroe County, Erie County, Onondaga, your larger counties.
Uh-huh.
The smaller counties, they obviously can't really sustain a full medical examiner system because of the cost, have elected county coroners.
Okay.
So in Ontario County, there is four elected county coroners.
Okay. Very good to know.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, the platform you're going to run on, a little bit about your background, and what we should expect if you're our elected sheriff.
Well, first, I appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk to everybody.
I really appreciate you coming down.
I really do. Well, basically, my background is I was born and raised here in Canandaigua. I've lived here all my life. I lived in the county all my life. I was, like you said in your opening, the third generation in law enforcement. My grandfather, Charles Sr., was a Canandaigua City police officer and was started in 1924. My dad, Charles Jr., Young Charlie, they called him, started in the state police in 1952. He was actually a veteran, a World War II veteran and Korean War veteran. Was in the Pacific Campaign and the Marine Corps. I'm very proud of my dad's legacy. He, during the war, he was wounded twice over in the Pacific Campaign on Saipan and the Tinian Islands. And then my dad was sent back stateside, became an honor guard member of the Marine Corps. And when FDR died in 1945, April of 45, my dad was actually chosen to be on the honor guard. And
wow.
There's a picture of my father, which I'm very proud of, standing in the rotunda at the Capitol over the body, over the casket of FDR. And he's actually in Life magazine, 1945 edition. He's right in the magazine.
Wow,
so I'm very proud of my dad. Yeah, and again, you know, my whole family, we're all civil service. My mom worked at the sheriff's office in the civil division. My brother Mark is currently the chief of police in the town of Brighton up in Monroe County.
I'm going to say that name sounded a little familiar.
Yeah, he was actually on TV last night. They made a good arrest and a counterfeit.
Oh yeah, the counterfeit.
Yeah,
the story. Yeah.
Oh, that makes me want to check out money in my wallet.
Yeah, check your money because unfortunately it's out there. Well, again, there are signs. Again, looking at the bill, especially the new bills were designed to prevent counterfeiting, but they're finding that they're trying. The feel of the bill, look for the watermark. That's the telltale sign. Hold that bill up to the light. Look for that watermark because the watermark is a very, very difficult to forge. So you really got to take the time and look at the bills. They're $50 and $100 bills is what they're passing.
Oh,
so
I collect 50s and 100s.
Of course you do.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that.
I don't collect anything less than 1,000. So.
Yeah.
I got dollar bills.
Yeah, I've got coins. So to finish with me, I actually started at the sheriff's office in 1984. Gary Stewart was a sheriff then. I don't know if anybody remembers Gary Stewart from Bloomfield.
Yeah.
He hired me in 1984. I actually started as a part-time deputy on the Marine unit. And then in 1986, I went full-time in the jail division and was a corrections officer for about a year. And then I was then promoted to the road patrol deputy ranks, and I did the rest of my career as a road patrol deputy.
So you've done Marine. You've done
corrections.
You've done road patrol. So
coroner.
What have you not? Right, coroner.
Yeah, coroner.
What have you not done?
The school thing.
Yep, and throughout my career as the sheriff, there's more. Throughout my career at the sheriff's office, I was in the canine unit. I had a narcotics canine dog for 7 years. I'm very proud of that. Her name was Fudgy. She was a Labrador that the county purchased from a breeder down in New Mexico.
Okay.
She and I went through a 5-week canine academy together. We have to go through as a team. We both have to pass the test. My test is a little bit more difficult than hers. I have to take the written exam. Her test was she was able to detect 5 different types of narcotics. Once we passed that test, then we were certified canine handlers. And then I was able to go in and testify at trials that my ability as a handler, but also the ability of my canine. So I'm very proud I did that. I was also and I still am a community police officer. I go out throughout the county. I speak to various organizations, try to problem solve. Remind people in the city of Canandaigua not to park across the sidewalk, and things like that. We address community concerns, and I give advice on approaches that we could take, both in law enforcement, but also community. We need to work together as a group.
Yeah, now I know you served on a panel recently with the opioid epidemic
Yes.
and the partnership is that
the Partnership for Ontario County?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And it's a not-for-profit organization that I'm a member with, and I sit on many subcommittees with this partnership.
Okay.
One of them being the Substance Abuse Coalition.
Okay.
Basically, what we're seeing right now, like everybody else in the country, is the heroin or opioid epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just heroin. It's other drugs as well.
Right.
And I do sit on that panel. I've been on that panel now for about 7 years, and we work with Petraea Ray. Petraea is our coordinator with that program, does a tremendous job.
Right. I mean, Petraea really has become like the face in Ontario
yes.
County of the opioid epidemic.
Yes.
She has been everywhere. I mean, every time I turn around, Petraea is out there speaking about the
yes.
opioid
She's
epidemic.
She's been on our show twice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and she does a terrific job. And what we do is we call them community cafes. We go out, we talk to the community throughout the county, and then beyond our county border. We were just down at Cuca College talking to the college group down there because we want to get the message out that, yes, it is a problem. We are seeing a rapid increase in deaths. Myself as coroner, just last year, and I'm one of four, I had 17 overdose deaths myself.
You yourself,
my case
not the other three.
Not
wow.
the other three. Not the other three.
Okay.
So again, we are seeing this. So we need, again, to work together as a group and get the message out that those that are in need of our help or in need of help, we have resources that we could recommend. Addiction, substance abuse or addiction resources, FLACRA, and other organizations that the folks that are seeking the treatment, we can offer some help to them. It's really a message that we need to get out there. On the law enforcement side, obviously we need to take the approach, how are we going to solve this? Granted, if we had the magic wand, we would all love to wave that today. In the law enforcement component, if I become the sheriff, continue the initiatives that Sheriff Phil Pavro is doing and only build them stronger. Have a more aggressive narcotics unit. And it's not just Ontario County Sheriff's Office. It's all law enforcement. The City of Canandaigua and the City of Geneva Police Departments. The outlying counties and surrounding bordering counties. Working together as a group, as a unified group in law enforcement. Going out and going after our dealers. Going after those that are pushing these drugs on our street that are causing these problems. And be aggressive in arrest. But on the other end, we also need to look at those that are seeking to use the drugs and pushing the treatment options that are out there. That are out there.
Right. So, like I know in Buffalo, they actually started something called an opioid court.
Yes.
And have you been up to see that?
I haven't. We've talked about it
okay.
at some of our cafes.
Okay.
Jeff Taylor, one of our assistant district attorneys,
right.
Has attended some of the training. And like you said, Judge Aronson, who is actually our drug court administrative judge, oversees drug court. We are looking at those, and we are using those options for some of those that get arrested for possession because of their addiction. And our goal is not to put them in jail and throw away the key. Our goal is to hopefully be able to change that behavior of addiction and get them the help that they seek.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a great program.
I wanted to ask something here, too, that with friends and family over the holiday season, that was one of the topic of discussion around the dinner table. What's going on? Because I know that the three of us, Mike, Tim, myself, we grew up in an era where there was a burst of drug use. But it doesn't seem to have reached the level that it is today. So this is a tough question, but something to think about. What's a driving force to make an individual become so dependent on these drugs?
Well, if you look at the data and what why are we where we are today? Why? And basically, that's what you're asking. You look at big pharmaceuticals now. A lot of the states, New York has just joined this
right. That's what
lawsuit.
Cuomo announced in his State of the State
yes.
that we're going to be suing the pharmaceutical companies along with the other states for over-prescribing opioids, over-pushing them.
Yeah, and again, I'm not the pharmacist, I'm not the chemist, but knowing what I know in my duties as coroner, and, you know, I try to stay on top, a lot of self-education, is when they developed these opioid pain medications, they sold it as non-addictive medication. It will help you manage your pain. It's a safe way to do that. And again, I think what they're realizing is, just like big tobacco, is that was that completely accurate? And I believe the states are now saying, no, that information, you've pushed information that was inaccurate, causing this epidemic where we are today. Years ago, if we needed to, we would go to a doctor and, geez, I have my back hurts, or I just had my tooth pulled. Well, we'll give you 50 Vicodin to manage through the pain. Well, we know we could probably use one or two pills, and that was it. But I think the dentist, the doctors, were all being told, this is safe medication. Go ahead and prescribe it. It's non-addictive, and we'll be fine. Well, that's not true.
Right.
It is an addictive medication.
Yeah.
And if you look at the opioids and opiates, the opiates are synthetics, which are your fentanyl-based medications. That is what we're seeing. Majority of our deaths now are the synthetic medications are pushing these deaths. It's not the opioid, which is the natural. It's the opiates, which are the synthetics.
Right, and that fentanyl, I mean, that's an extremely powerful drug, isn't it?
Very, very potent. 100 times more potent than morphine. And that's the problem we're seeing is, don't get me wrong, if any addict that's out there, anybody that is in this problem, if you were to ask them, you know, you're taking a chance here that you don't know what you're putting in your body, they're willing to accept that risk because the drive, the need is such demanding on their system. But then when you say we're seeing these deaths with fentanyl, they're not realizing when they're out buying these drugs that they're laced with fentanyl.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot of fentanyl cocaine mixtures coming into our data, into our toxicology screens when we do tox and get it back on these cases. It's scary. It's scary. In law enforcement, we need to address that. We need to be very diligent and aggressive on our investigations. Make sure we do a good job, that we don't lose these cases when we present them to the district attorney or when we go to trial, and send a message out. And I think Ontario County has sent a message out, not only in drug charges, but also in driving while intoxicated.
Yeah.
Now we're in the 33rd year of 34 right. for the leading convictions.
We certainly have gotten that reputation, right?
Yes.
And we want to create the same reputation as far as the drug dealers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, to finish up with who I am, again, I've lived here all my life. I've worked in this county all my life. I've seen the growth in this county. The town of Victor, Farmington Corridor, has grown threefold since I started in 1984.
Yeah.
I've seen the growth along the lake. We have a great county. I think we do a great job in law enforcement. I just want to continue building the initiatives, build my own initiatives if I become the next sheriff, and let people know that I'm here for them. I'm very dedicated. I'll be very visible. I'll be a very visible sheriff. I'll be right in the trenches with the men and women that we have working not only for our department, but for our surrounding agencies and take a team approach.
Great.
Kevin, I'd like to throw out there, you have deployments, which I always find as a military person interesting. Hurricane Katrina in 05, Flight 3407 in 09, and Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico 2017.
Yes.
You've really, and a lot of these for the mortuary?
Yeah, correct. I also serve my country. I'm with the Health and Human Services Division with the federal government, and I'm on a team called DMOR, which is a Disaster Mortuary Operational Response Team. And what that is, in a nutshell, is it's a group of experts in their fields. I'm assigned to mortuary affairs, and my duty is to, if a mass fatality event occurs, and unfortunately we do have those, be it a natural disaster, a large plane crash, 9/11, I respond, and my expertise is either going out to do the retrieval or working with the other experts in their fields to identify and to make sure that we return a loved one to the family for a proper burial and closure. And I've been doing that since 2002, and I've been in several deployments throughout the country. Typically, it's 2 weeks to a month. I was in Puerto Rico recently for a little over 3 weeks assisting Puerto Rico and the medical examiner's office.
That's great. Yeah. We shipped 100 bunk beds to Puerto Rico.
Maybe I slept on one of them.
Maybe.
Usually I started off on the floor. So
we did 5,000 mattresses at our cost between us and the distributor to Hurricane Katrina.
Great.
Yeah. It's amazing what you can do.
Yes.
Right. As a business.
Yeah. Yes. And we're grateful for that because, again, when we're deployed, we're not staying in hotels or motels. We're sleeping. When I was in Katrina, sent down to Baton Rouge, we stayed at an old school. The first 3 days, I slept on a wood floor of a tent. Then we had some cots, and we slept on cots for the rest of our deployment.
Yeah.
We worked 12 to 16-hour shifts. And when I was down at Katrina, of course, that was a very large event. Within just over 3 weeks I was there, we processed a little over 800 cases.
Wow.
In just the 3 weeks. So we have a great team. We're very proud of what we do. And we're all facets of expertise, from forensic pathologists to mortuary affairs to odontologists to forensic anthropologists and so on.
Very good. Still got 2 minutes?
Thanks for throwing that out there.
You're welcome.
Why do you think I have these little cards?
We're on Facebook Live here, so when you do this...
I could have been doing this.
Well, I didn't know if you were giving me a peace sign and a victory sign, or you telling me we
still
got 2 minutes.
No, this is the European way of... So, Kevin, bring it home for us. Tell us anything you want to do about your platform.
Well, again, my campaign, my official kickoff is coming up on January 14th. I'm going to be doing that at the American Legion, 1 to 3.
So is that open to the public?
It's open. If somebody wants to stop, absolutely.
Good.
I'll be there if people want to talk to me and have questions. My platform basically is, I love serving my community. I've been in public sector work since I graduated high school. At 33 years on the job, I'm still able and willing to continue. I want to make sure that the folks know who I am and that if I become the next sheriff, that I will serve the community as strong as I have for the last 33 years, and that as we look forward, I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to listen to community groups and do this together because you can't do it on your own. We need to work cohesively as a group, and we need to work together in our department. We have a great department. The men and women that work at our sheriff's office do a great job each and every day.
Right. Now, the sheriff is also in charge of the 911 center,
yes.
Right? So that's another facet that you have to be responsible for.
Yeah, and ironically, I had an uncle that was a 911 dispatcher. But, yes, we're basically the 911 center, the jail division, civil division, unified court security, which is all the security
right.
for both county and town courts. So, yeah, it's the sheriff. We have 303 employees, roughly, at the sheriff's office. Yeah, with those divisions, so we're a busy sheriff's office.
Is the jail part of your jurisdiction?
Yes, the jail is also part of the jurisdiction. And we have a our roughly 270-plus bed jail facility out in Hopewell, the county complex.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Very good.
All right. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, you can go to my website and learn more about me, which is HendersonForSheriff, that's all one word, .org. My email is HendersonForSheriff@gmail.com. And
Facebook page is Henderson for Sheriff.
I was just going to say my Facebook, and I'm also on Twitter, which is K Henderson 2018. Henderson for Sheriff wouldn't fit on Twitter.
Okay.
They restrict on the number of characters. But again, I encourage you to go on. You can contact me via any of those links, and I encourage you to follow my campaign, and I look forward to this coming year, and we'll be very proactive in the community, and you'll see me at a lot of parades, functions, and anybody that wants to have me come in and talk, I'm more than willing to come in.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for allowing us to interview you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for running and your community service.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody in our radio audience for turning on and tuning in on this cold Saturday morning.
Okay. Well, as always, we'll see you on the flip side, and thanks for listening to Three Men and a Microphone, Civil War Radio, and be safe. Don't slip and fall.